passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Ride with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Ride for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade. Take the mic.
Hello and welcome to Rewind to Ride. It's John Pollock and Waiting. Your 1-2 punch coming out of 3 hours of Raw. A huge edition of the show.
Oh, one of the biggest, I would say. Yeah.
Wait, what was your favorite disqualification tonight?
When Edge speared Balor to interrupt, that was pretty monumental. Never seen that. When Becky Lynch stepped away from commentary and interrupted the match in the main event.
We got all of them. We had a short-changed main event. We had a long title match with a DQ as well.
Of course, yeah. Yes. I mean, how else are you going to drive interest into, the next thing?
Do you want to know that tonight, WWE did more DQ finishes tonight than the history of Dynamite and Rampage? Mm-hmm. They have done 2.
Right, yeah. Well, that's... I mean, there are different ways of building to professional wrestling grudge matches, and one company has one way, and another has another philosophy.
Yes, it's an interesting note. I got a lot of feedback today after... Every month, Way, we chat about these WWE pay-per-views, and you and I usually always say the same thing, that if you just go from pay-per-view to pay-per-view, this is the optimal viewing experience, and... When I wrote about it today, I got a lot of feedback from people that, I mean, I got no disagreement from this, that if you had watched WrestleMania this year, those were very positively reviewed shows. If you had come out of those 2 shows and your next experience watching WWE was last night's show, I think you would have said, great.
Wrestling's great. I love the WWE.
It's a monthly commitment where I have time to look forward to a show where it's wrestling night that I'm going to sit down and watch WWE. I'm going to get a pretty satisfactory episode. And what's the investment after? I get a 4-week break and I come back for another one of these next month. Maybe I get together with some friends. Maybe I follow the industry from a periphery standpoint, just listening to shows or reading stuff. Maybe I totally disengage. It's like... many UFC fans, I imagine, where you don't need that week-to-week commitment. Maybe you're just following the pay-per-views every month. And I think that would be, to me, actually a selling feature if I was looking to grow my WWE audience, is you don't have to necessarily have the commitment of weekly television. But on the other side of things, it's never been more profitable, this television. That seems to be, if you're just looking from a creative standpoint, it's the least engaging it's ever been.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. I mean, that's what the model of professional wrestling always was. And I mean, still continues to be outside of television, right? It's maybe a monthly event that you might demand people's attention for. I would maybe contend that it might be the optimal viewing, but I mean, it's a very different ecosystem we're in and a very different set of numbers that we're dealing with, where essentially I think what is supposed to be your commercial for those monthly events are really your prime generator of income. So it's just, I wish that the same amount of effort was put into these weekly shows to make them as entertaining as they typically are on the pay-per-view weekends. And I don't for a fact, or don't for a second think that that's not possible. What makes the pay-per-view so good is that the wrestling is good, because you have some very talented professional wrestlers there. And also because they go ahead and give you finishes. Not DQs, not, you know, just kind of bullshit things. They give you satisfying things. And that's really what AEW's philosophy is. I mean, and I don't want to just turn this into a comparison, but what I'm trying to say is that when you just give me good professional wrestling, I think these 3 hours could actually be, you know, decently watchable, if not even very good. Instead, it's just kind of mindless repeats of matches, poorly acted backstage promos, and non-finishes, even to what, you know, looks to be actually pretty decent matches in the body.
If you could just wave your magic wand, like one, I'm not going to say like just like uproot the show and some grandiose change, like, oh, all the storylines make sense. Like a reasonable change that could be just one thing about the WWE television presentation that you think would go a long way. Just, like one thing that they could do away with that would be sizable. I go directly to promos. I think that is one thing that if you could eliminate the WWE speak and have a lot more natural promos, God forbid they go past their time cues. I just think having these promos that were real people talking about real scenarios and real stories, I think that would go a long way in terms of a change you could make tomorrow. And I think it would pay dividends for the viewer at home that is watching every week that would be more engaged.
Possibly. But, you know, that itself is a test, though, because how many people on this roster have that experience, not having that safety net of a script?
Wait, you know, we look at it from the in-ring standpoint. How many are not prepared and we're throwing them out there into the deep end to learn on the job? I think talking should be a requisite for this job, and I'm fine with people going out there that some will fail, but some will absolutely thrive in that kind of a scenario, and I think that would make a big difference just in terms of being engaged in some of these programs that are grounded a bit more in reality, that these people are speaking as themselves instead of these ridiculous caricatures of human beings that I could never possibly encounter in a daily basis going into somebody who is telling me their list of championship wins and each and every one of you. And if you live in Hartford, you're ugly. I just think like more promos would be just, I'm not saying that changes the game, but that would be right from the start something that there would be an immediate impact on.
It's one of many things that I think you could put to. Yeah, it might be one of the principal things, but I don't, you know, there are many probably issues that are keeping this show from being an entertaining 3 hours. But I would say the other thing is that, I mean, they're still winning their nights, you know, or at least they're still coming very close and they're still doing very well for the broadcaster. So when you still have those results, I mean, they don't have much reason to change.
They don't. They're in a position where I think you look just at the overall popularity. Is this growing? No, but they're also at a level where this is very a very successful formula that they are producing. I just look at it that I don't see this as something that would necessarily be a negative to them at all. That, like, the idea of engaging programming, are we looking at anybody that is looking at WWE?
There's no guarantee that it would be engaging. And from their perspective, again, I'm just trying to say what they might be thinking. They want something that they can rely on that's this timed, you know, that they know maybe these particular camera shots are there for. They don't seem to want things that are unpredictable, I suppose. At least, you know, for people that they don't necessarily trust. Anyway, that's... Do you want to spend the whole show maybe talking about how...
I would love to.
How our problems with maybe this program. We'll probably get to it anyway.
Well, we have 3 hours to get into, but off the top, I just want to quickly go over the schedule this week at Post Wrestling. Already up on the site today, a special edition of MCU Later, where yourself and W.H. Park got together with John Cena for a spoiler-heavy review of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness that the three of you have seen.
Yeah, yeah. I've been holding my thoughts in all weekend long. Because I had a lot of them, because it was pretty interesting. You know, this is a very hyped movie, and when it came out, it seems like a lot of people saw it, John. I mean, it is at this point the 11th highest grossing opening domestically of all time. So a lot of people ended up seeing this, and a lot of people had a lot of varied opinions for a Marvel film. Typically, those films are usually pretty well received. This one was really a strange, an interesting mix across the board. So
you were going to say strange mix.
I was about to. Oh, yes, but yeah. So me, W.H. Park, John Cena, we've been really hyped to see this, and we have some very passionate thoughts as we break down everything that there is, including all the reveals, including all the storylines and future development. So if you're a Post Wrestling Cafe patron and you like the MCU, go and check these out, postwrestlingcafe.com.
Yes. It contains spoilers, you said?
I think so, yeah.
Yes, okay. I want to make that clear for everyone out there that might mistakenly download this and listen to the whole thing and then be upset after. I'm a little annoyed that you told me ahead of time there's spoilers, because I would have liked to have found that out for myself, but you ruined that. Also coming up this week, we will be back with the Post Daily News Show Tuesday at 1 Eastern, Tuesday through Friday this week. Wednesday, we've got Rewind to Dynamite with Shot in the Dark. Thursday, it is Martin Bushby, Benno, and Andy Ogden together for the British Wrestling Experience. You can subscribe to their own feed as they go through all the latest UK wrestling news. And then we've got Rewind to SmackDown Friday, which I guess will be starting at 10 because we have SmackDown in its normal time. Rampage, early start time, which as of Monday night, we don't know when that start time is. Not good.
Not good, yeah. I don't expect those ratings to bounce back after this past Friday, unfortunately.
We'll go through the numbers on Tuesday, as expected. They got obliterated on Friday and probably going to be the case this Friday. Depending on when this show starts, I will do my best to watch Rampage, but I don't even know when it's going to be airing on Friday, so we shall see. And then rounding out the week, Saturday, W.H. Park will be joined by Benno for the long and winding Royal Road, chatting Stan Hansen and Vader. Long before Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins had an eye for an eye match, these two competed at the Tokyo Dome in February of 1990, where Vader pretty much lost an eye. This is one of the more gruesome matches in history. So they will be chatting about that on Saturday. And then Sunday, it is WrestleNomics Day, every Sunday at postwrestling.com. A packed lineup, as always.
As always, everybody working hard, including yourself, Andrew Thompson, and all our contributors on the website as well. So thanks to all of us, all of you guys who are checking all that work out.
Yes, and quickly, you can go back to this weekend. We have post shows from UFC 274 and WrestleMania Backlash. If you want to hear, for the you guys are so negative crowd, go listen to our WrestleMania Backlash review to even everything out. But into Raw, from the XL Center in Hartford, Connecticut, RK-Bro came out to start the show, and they're going to be facing the Street Profits tonight. Another very pro-Randy crowd, and they stated they lost the battle at Backlash, but will win the war, and Randy revisits the idea of a unification match and wanting to unify the title. So it looks like, at least teasing, going back to that idea.
Yeah, seems like it. I suppose they, you know, this is something, of course, they could have done last night, but, you know, maybe the want to involve Roman and Drew into it caused them to change their plans. And looks like maybe on TV we might end up getting this unification, or do you think they put it all the way until Hell in a Cell?
I could see it at Hell in a Cell, because you have to wonder what is going to be at Hell in a Cell when, you know,
maybe
you're talking.
No Roman, are you saying?
I mean, we don't have a program for Roman, so maybe we'll get a sense on Friday about what they're doing with Roman. They tease that Roman will be there. Well, they flat out said that RK-Bro is going to go to SmackDown to ask Roman Reigns for permission for the Usos to face them, because they know that Roman calls the shots. So I would say if we don't get an angle shot with Roman Reigns, yeah, then it's possible, like Hell in a Cell, you don't have Charlotte Flair around. Roman's a question mark, and then You know, what are your big matches going to be for Hell in a Cell? The unification might be one of those matches.
And when do you think they put it in the cell, that match?
Yeah, I could see it. Like, that's the one thing. I guess other than Cody and Seth, I don't really see a Hell in a Cell program ready. So maybe Cody and Seth is your big match at Hell in a Cell, and the title unification, maybe that's your one, too. Possible.
Maybe.
So they go over that and the plans for SmackDown, and then the Street Profits interrupt, and they're going to be the ones to unify the tag titles they state. And they want the smoke, which was a layup for Riddle to give his response, that RK-Bro 420 says, "We just smoked your ass." And I swear to God, I looked at my calendar and it did not say 1997. And Randy Orton did not get that memo because he thought this was the most clever thing ever uttered on WWE television.
I suppose it was somewhat groundbreaking.
This is pretty daring. Yeah. I mean, making pot references.
It more so kind of like, you know, set the timestamp on where the mentality of this show is versus where maybe the zeitgeist was, you know, what, 25 years ago.
Yeah, well, there you go. RK-Bro and the Street Profits for the Raw tag titles. Riddle goes to the floor and Ford hits a Tope Con Hero and then does the Orton pose. We go to break, come back, heat on Riddle. Orton gets the tag, power slams to both guys, draping DDT, and then Riddle hits a PK and floating Bro to the floor, but misses his target and takes out Randy. And in the ring, Ford hits From the Heavens, but Randy returns, saving his partner, and then another From the Heavens attempt leads to an RKO in midair by Riddle, pinning Ford in 10 minutes and 10 seconds. So a title retention by RK-Bro, but also like our first kind of miscommunication spot with Riddle and Orton that was the prime focus of this match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if that thread continues, you know, throughout their future tag team appearances, but I mean, it's by the end of this match, it seemed like everything was still perfectly good between the two. Perhaps it was just a spot designed for this particular instance.
It did set up a great near fall spot where Randy mm-hmm. makes the save, but also something that you can just bank in the back of, you know, something that will either be never referenced again or will be something to look back on.
Mm-hmm. Great little TV match here. Great pacing and great pressure from the beginning to the end from the Street Profits. And a brilliant finish here from Riddle and Ford with that RKO out of nowhere. This is a tag team that continues to be on fire. So what about the Street Profits? What do you see for them coming off of this?
I mean, they kind of just feel like when you're not, and this goes for the women's tag division as well, when you're not in the championship picture, then you're not really focused on. And that's sort of where the Street Profits are. Like Alpha Academy is kind of involved by being attached to Kevin Owens, but the Street Profits don't have a whole lot going, and they've just after the one win over RK-Bro before WrestleMania, they've lost several, and I mean, well, they haven't really pulled the turn yet that could give them kind of a new direction. They seem to be further hinting at that, but haven't gone all the way yet.
Well, being paired against RK-Bro, which, you know, are definitely the more over tag team, they've definitely been positioning themselves more as like the lesser favorites. But I wonder if at this point you have any more direction, other direction to go with them. They need freshening up, in my opinion, and maybe heel turn is the way to go. How they kind of, you know, have that going on at the same time while they're continuing to recognize Montez Ford and Bianca Belair being together, maybe that might be a challenge. I don't know, but I would be more interested in the Profits if they were turned at this point.
Then, after Riddle took us back to 1997... Kevin Patrick took us back to 1990 because we were on the interview platform that used to be a staple of mm-hmm. WWF programming to bring out Theory. So I like the visual of this. It was quite the throwback and a different look as well for an interview segment on WWE. So, yeah.
No, I totally agree. I mean, to me, this is a WWE staple shot. You know, it's probably a Kevin Dunn signature. And something that always felt like it was something that symbolized the TV show I was watching. And I guess WCW did it too, but to me, I always associate it with WWF, and I don't mind them bringing it back at all.
So he says that he is barely scratching his potential. He was in diapers the last time Cody was in WWE.
The last time might have used this shot, Theory must have been 2 years old or something.
I don't know if like Theory was like ever properly potty trained because he would have been wearing diapers like 6 years ago. Like That's a really advanced age for diapers.
You know, certain people have certain issues. We shouldn't shame.
And he doesn't care about Cody or respecting history. He is the future. Simple promo. Not a whole lot to it other than the production choice. Mm-hmm. Judgment Day comes out. Edge has cut his hair. Somewhere along the way, mainly in WWE, like the idea of cutting someone's hair just is like nothing. I always look at it like I always think like what a lost opportunity just to cut a guy's hair. Like let's get some like value out of such a decision that this man is making.
I always feel that way. You know, anytime like if you're a wrestler and you're going to the barbershop and you're like, hey, give me that haircut, I imagine like what remains on the floor is just a pile of money that somebody's about to just sweep into a bag. Cause, it would have added something to the match last night. Don't you think, between Edge and AJ? I mean, the stipulation would have come out of nowhere. It wouldn't really have fit the story whatsoever, but,
what didn't fit the story at all was Edge going to the barber this morning when no one was around and doing this. Like at the very least, Edge coming out and cutting a promo about the Edge you loved is dead and you're never getting him back, and having Damian Priest cut his hair right there in the ring to shed himself of the Edge that I am sickened by because of you people. And he just cuts his hair. That would have been like a stunning moment for this audience to see Edge, that everyone associates with this hair, cut it right there in the ring.
Yeah, maybe he just had a feeling, you know, he woke up today and was like, maybe he got gum in it overnight and just like, you know what, chop it off. Done. He looks good. He's a good looking man, no matter length of hair. He can rock multiple cuts. He's kind of got Rhea Ripley's haircut, didn't he?
Yeah, Damian's next, so look out. Yeah, I'm sure he'll be doing it off camera as well. I'm sure some camera was. He had to have filmed this, right? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe for his TikTok or something.
Edge says that the three of them were tired of being sheep, like you people. What did that get us? Or what did that get him? He says, a Hall of Fame ring. Big deal. I'm bigger than the Hall of Fame. He could have listed off like all the accolades here, like typical here. It's got him quite a lot, to be quite honest. Like he's done okay.
Sure, yeah.
Being a sheep.
The Hall of Fame is the biggest one, maybe.
He says, no one cares about all the surgeries I've had, but you all love to make your comments, you keyboard warriors, and your asinine comments. You fans are ugly, and they love, the three of them, what we see in the mirror. And if you live here in Hartford, you're a moron. He called them ugly morons. I mean, this was just beyond the pale here. I will say this. This is like the most introductory heel like promo work. But it's also stuff like all these fans boo and stuff. And it's almost like I feel Edge wants to be maybe a more sophisticated heel, but it's like it's the most baseline stuff that seems to get the most response from these audiences at the same time. Like I find this to be like very uninspired promo work, but it's also like the crowd boos because you called us ugly.
You know, maybe coming off of the reaction to their psychology heavy match last night, not getting that big of a reaction. Maybe today he's just like, I'm going to go back to 101, you know, and bring it back to the basics.
Maybe they feel they're overthinking what the audience wants out of this. I don't know. Maybe. I'm conflicted saying like, I'm not enjoying these promos, but I'm also noting these lines that I think are cringe are not cringe to the audience that you are getting the it's the only parts of the promos that are heavily booed.
I would contend that I think there's a way that you can achieve both. You can achieve something that, you know, insults the crowd that reacts to the, you know, generic kind of heel lines, while also being a bit more unique and being a bit more memorable so that maybe everybody watching, the more experienced viewer, the lesser experienced viewer, can find some enjoyment out of it. You can't tell me that, like, you know, like a great heel promo coming out here. You know, what's your favorite heel promo from the past?
This was it. This was the top one.
Okay, whatever. Fine.
Set the bar. I was just waiting for a Hartford Whalers reference. I was left. Well,
whatever. Like Roddy Piper. Like, you can't tell me him coming out here and, like, you know, cutting a promo on the crowd won't get this crowd to react while also getting all the people who've watched wrestling forever to react as well. And I think ultimately that's somebody, that's a level of excellence that I would imagine somebody like Edge is looking to strive towards. To me, he's still trying to figure this character out. What he was playing before was very much an exaggeration of himself. This does not feel like that. It feels like it's a total kind of fabricated type of alternate version of him. But it can work. It still, to me, still on its way. So I will say, like, I think Rhea being a part of the group is at least a step towards, I think making them feel that much more unique. It gives them some youth. It adds, you know, like now the women's sort of, roster that for them to conquer as well. So, it's an improvement, I think.
Priest referred to Rhea as their instrument of brutality and demands that the fans rise up for Rhea Ripley. And Rhea takes the microphone and says this was the easiest decision of her life. Edge and Damian have changed themselves for the better, and she wanted it for herself. She is done signing your autographs at the airport, the same autographs I see the next day on eBay, and I am done being used. And addresses Liv Morgan, will destroy her tonight. And Edge refers to Damian as the punishment and Rhea as the eradicator. And they are Edge's saints of fate. And Liv was holding down Rhea Ripley, so Edge had a conversation with Rhea a few weeks ago and told her to just dump her. And his movement is not done. We are not finished yet. We are looking for more. And that's when Liv Morgan comes out for the match.
Those nicknames, like, remind me of Retribution. You know, are we sure this is not like a...
The punishment, the eradicator, yeah. the saints of fate.
So they're looking for more members, they said.
They're recruiting, yes. They're expanding.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. I like them giving, like, Edge the credit for the breakup of Liv Morgan versus Rhea Ripley. Sure. It works for the match.
Yeah. I mean, it gave a reason. So, yeah, we'll see where this goes. I think this is a group that it's very much trying to find its footing, and maybe they will. I would have faith that in time, like Edge leading this thing, it's going to kind of find its direction, but I still think it's searching for it. Mm-hmm. Ripley and Liv Morgan had a match where Liv got destroyed for most of this. Liv gets put in a body scissors, and she's screaming and just yells, "I hate you." You imagine what do you do with that if you got someone in like a submission and they're like, "I hate you."
Ever see a UFC fight where, like, you know, somebody was caught in a Kimura and they're like,
imagine Carlos Esparza yelled that. That might have, like, got Rose Namajunas to really just let loose. So Liv stops a riptide and finally fights back. It's the double knees off the middle rope for a two count, and then there's a kick off the mat. Liv misses a missile drop kick and an inverted cloverleaf. Rhea's submission is applied and taps her out in 5 minutes and 39 seconds, and Edge gives the nod to continue the attack, so she reapplies it, just like Veer Mahan, and she taps but won't release it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was this, like, you know, one of the two matches we actually got a finish to on this entire show?
It was this was a clean finish that we got. So,
that already puts it in the top percentile of matches that I saw tonight. But I thought it was a good little match between the two. I think Morgan continues to improve and work. She works hard. I do have some concern for her, of course, coming off of this, though, because this did not feel like this feud was continuing beyond this.
No, this was match one. Wait. I had many questions left unanswered by the end of this, so I think they'll run this one back multiple times.
Maybe, but if they don't, I mean, my concern would just be that, you know, she kind of felt like somebody. I mean, obviously, Rhea Ripley is the person who just turned. She's the person with the more potential coming out of this, so you should be focusing on her. But I felt like they would have given Morgan maybe a bit more of a heroic outcome or heroic fight, because this, to me, kind of gives me the indication that she is expendable and somebody who's very far from future title contention.
Yeah, this does feel like Ripley's character has gotten on the elevator and is leaving Liv Morgan behind in sort of the Liv Morgan role on the show, yeah, for lack of a better term.
The Eradicator Elevator.
The Eradicator Elevator. Maybe that can be the name of the submission that they've never named. Finn Balor comes out, followed by AJ. They do the two sweet deal, and Damian Priest takes on Finn Balor. So Balor does a roll-up to counter the choke slam and hits a sling blade, clotheslines him to the floor, and then goes for a topic on Hero, but Rhea Ripley stands in front to block Balor, allowing Edge to spear him for the disqualification. And Styles jumps in, attacking Edge with his injured shoulder. Priest gets involved, and AJ is firing away, turns around, and goes to punch, but it's Rhea Ripley, and AJ can't hit a woman. So he pauses, and Edge sends AJ's injured shoulder into the post, and Priest and Edge do a spear leg sweep combination, like a high-low, and they stand tall and do their pose, which is putting their arms in the air.
Mm-hmm. Should they do something more interesting?
They like, should put their arms out horizontally like the scales of justice, and they can just like that, they do this in unison. That should be the Judgment Day pose. They can lock like they can clasp their fingers together, and they can just go with like the scales of justice. That's the pose I want.
I was going to suggest like maybe like one of them does a J and the other does a D, like the YMCA.
Ugh. You could do the JAS for the group that they're going to get compared to.
Yeah, they're putting a lot. You can see we're thrilled about this direction for this group. No, seriously, it's whatever. It's a stable, and they're putting focus on Ripley. It's a renewed push. So, sure, some renewed strength from the group. Do you think AJ and Balor are going to add a female to their little faction here?
Oh, Liv, right?
Okay.
So we've
is she going to be Bullet Club?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes. Yeah, Liv. Maybe. Yes. I don't know. Maybe they can come up with some catchy name for the three of them. But yeah, I assume this all continues. And I guess the tease that like Judgment Day will continue to grow.
Yes. Yes.
Alpha Academy is with Kevin Owens, who is in his Dusty Rhodes shirt. And Gable got the red cup from last week's segment that Ezekiel was drinking from and has sent it to the DNA lab. And he's going to be able to prove that Ezekiel has been lying all this time. So they didn't put a lot of focus on this, but I guess we're getting a DNA test result next week.
Yes, we are. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. This is some long-term build here. You know, you're coming off of the cup segment from last week to this, and then next week getting the results here. So I think it's interesting.
Owens mentions that he has a huge guest on the Kevin Owens show tonight. His brother, Ken Owens, is going to be here. He is the winner of a prestigious tournament, the Grand Prix in Nova Scotia, which was as close as we'll get to an Emile Dupree reference on Raw. And his older brother is going to come and beat the truth out of Ezekiel. 9 times out of 10, I would groan at this setup. With Kevin Owens, I was greatly looking forward to this as Ken Owens.
Me too. Yes. I think the three of them are very fun together.
These three are really great together. I mean, it's mainly the interplay between Owens and Gable, who it's like Owens like cannot stand this guy, but at the same time, he is of value to this cause that he is fighting with Ezekiel. They have great chemistry together. MVP Lounge with MVP and Omos. MVP says that Lashley's ego got too big going into WrestleMania without him. So then the music plays, and that music sounded familiar. And yes, it was 205 Live original Cedric Alexander coming out, celebrating, we did it. And he says that together the three of them can be unstoppable. MVP cuts him off, says, I like you, but you need to stop. Lashley comes out and just destroys security. This was like he was playing Wardlow here. And he catches Cedric Alexander off the apron, destroys him, and then stands up to Omos in the ring and clotheslines Omos to the floor. And he is left with MVP when Cedric returns, allowing MVP a way out. And then Alexander is caught in the hurt lock as MVP and Omos leave Cedric Alexander for dead.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so this feud continues, building to what seems to be a rubber match and Cedric Alexander continuing to, you know, be a part of it, just sort of the jester of the whole thing, taking a beating on behalf of Omos, who doesn't even want him in the group. I'm glad he's got a role. I'm glad, you know, still keeping the Cruiserweight Classic alive. I mean, the Cruiserweight Classic, really a goldmine for comedic talent, I would say, on modern day WWE.
Yes.
Gulak, you know, the 24/7 division.
Yes. This elevation of Mustafa Ali, that's been comical. Yes. It's right. Lots. Adam Pearce is with Sonya Deville, and she wants to know who she's facing tonight, but then doesn't care, so she walks off. And then they did something interesting here, is that throughout the second hour, they kept promoting Theory and Cody Rhodes will have their U.S. title match at 10 p.m. Eastern time, really drilling in the time to obviously keep people for that third hour and hopefully offset that usual drop that they have. I don't think it'll be successful, but they were at least, this was a clear attempt to do so.
Well, is there a specific competition at 10 o'clock that they're trying to contend against?
I mean, they had, you know, usual, like the NBA and stuff tonight. I don't think anything specific was starting at 10. I think it was probably just to, you know, keep people for that third hour. It's just very hard for them to do that. But if it works, we will see.
We'll see. I think doing it is better than not doing it, right?
There was that period where, remember, they did the countdown, the actual countdown clock.
We tried a lot of stupid shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I remember all that. Like, even, like, the Underground was, like, didn't they build up to that in, like, the third hour or something?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of go in these waves when, like, they really try to hold on to, like, that audience for the third hour. I mean, it's just, this is the pattern of, like, an audience that pretty much they will tune in, they will watch 2 hours, and then a large segment of them are done by hour three, and that's...
For a billion-dollar company, like, I kind of admire how, like, you know... improvisational they are with these sort of like broadcast experiments. It's like, okay, you have an idea this week, let's just throw it out there and try it. A Raw Underground, okay, sure.
Yeah. Explain this wild card concept to us. Yeah. You know what, don't explain it, just go ahead. So Sonya Deville comes out and Pierce says the investigation is over. She has abused her power over and over. Her contract as an official has been terminated, but you're still a WWE superstar. And Sonya then got on the microphone and said, no. I lost a Loser Leaves WWE match at SummerSlam in 2020. I am not a WWE superstar. What about that? And Pierce gave, he filled in the hole. All of it made sense. And she is back. She is a WWE superstar.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is. Yeah. So the official end of Sonya Deville is a general manager, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, and we will see. Do you see someone filling in that role? Do we just get Adam Pearce? Like, they always like to refresh these every so often.
I think if there's a talent that's just kind of sitting by the wayside, not doing anything, who could speak, who they think could fill the role, then yeah. Is there that talent, though? Who are they going to make, Aaliyah a GM? Like, who's just sitting there that kind of needs a role?
Rick Boogs.
Okay. That's not... I think it's a terrible idea, but I mean, maybe not. Maybe it would work. Yeah.
So the opponent is Alexa Bliss, her first appearance on camera since Elimination Chamber back in February. And she comes out with Lily and gets a welcome back chant and hits a DDT and Twisted Bliss and wins in 41 seconds as Deville just has a meltdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Probably the biggest news coming out of this show. You know, big enough for postwrestling.com post for it.
That's how you know if there's news happening on Raw. If it's worthy of Andrew writing a story about it, it's newsworthy.
Yes. Yeah. Shout out Andrew Thompson.
Yes.
Yeah. Good, surprising, and impactful return, I would say. Everybody seems to be happy to see her back in the mix. You know, the men match wasn't much, but I mean, it was just more about the return. That's all. So she still has her doll.
Still got to sell those dolls.
Yeah. So, I mean, did she come back with looking like this last time? Or did she have like the whole makeup? She did the whole makeup thing, right?
I thought the whole thing was that, how did the therapy session end? Where it was like a replica
it ended with her
of the doll?
Looking like normal. And then they were saying like, yeah, I'm going to give you this replica of the doll as a memory.
Yes.
To contain your memories, I guess.
So, yeah, this is consistent then with that return in February.
Totally, yeah. Okay, so we're done with the gimmick. She still has the doll to remind us and to remind herself of...
To go to WWEshop.com because, you know, they had a good quarter, so...
Okay, all right. So, yeah, so I'm looking at the chamber, photos from the chamber. So she came out in that match still looking, like, still with the pigtails... But without the full-on makeup, now she's just kind of back to full-on, like, pre-Fiend Alexa Bliss.
Yes, that's what it looks like as I look here. Yes.
Okay.
I have very little memories of this Elimination Chamber match, but nonetheless. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where they go with
maybe
her.
Maybe she could transform partway through the match.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. You could do that. Okay. I pulled this up here. Bliss came out. She did not have Lily in the chamber when she came out.
Okay. Interesting. So this felt like the more appropriate follow-up to those vignettes.
Yes. Yeah. Because I seem to recall that's how the therapy ended, with the replica.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
I look forward to any corrections if I am not remembering the therapy sessions as in-depth as I know everyone out there did. Ezekiel comes out in the ring for the segment, and Kevin Owens is out in a wig as Kent Owens, his older brother. And he says right off the bat, he's trying to prove a point. And he asks everyone for a show of hands who believes this is really Ezekiel. And they cut to like two guys who put their arms up. And he yells at the audience for being dumb. He hates liars and reveals, I'm Kevin. And then Owens attacks him. Alpha Academy run down to join in. And no one comes to poor Ezekiel's help. And he gets splashed by Otis and hit with a stunner by Kevin Owens / Ken.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who's really a friend of this guy?
I don't know. But at the end of this segment, this was my conclusion. I really wish Kevin Owens had a brother, because I think they would be the most entertaining tag team. Especially if it was like a non, like his brother didn't follow any wrestling beyond like the odd thing his brother has done and came onto the show as a character that's totally out of this universe.
Are we
and
sure he doesn't have a brother?
He does not have a brother, no.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Sami Zayn is kind of like a brother to him, wouldn't you say?
I guess that's the closest you've got, yeah. So there is that.
Yeah, I thought these were amusing. You know, Owens, I think, plays like a really good, entertainer, doing a really silly but like fun, I would say, story. And I've been enjoying this Ezekiel Elias deal. Like, I think Ezekiel is a great entertainer.
I thought Ezekiel was kind of amusing in this segment. I have not been the biggest fan of this character, but I will say he was kind of entertaining playing off of Owens in this segment. Becky and Asuka are in the back with Adam Pearce, and so Asuka has to beat Bianca Belair tonight to receive a title shot. That's how Adam Pearce describes this. And Becky, speaking on behalf of everyone, said that makes no sense at all. And it kind of doesn't when you think about how like championships work. It's like you're going to beat the champion in a match scenario. It's like, and then you have to beat them in a real match afterwards.
Oh, I hate it. Like, yeah, no, like in no other sporting event. I mean, I suppose like, no, it just doesn't happen. Like, it does not happen.
Like, what's the difference between beating someone in? Like, the rules aren't different. This isn't like an amateur fight. It's not like the rounds are shorter. It's not like there's any difference in the rule set. You're beating them in the exact environment, but you have to do it twice, basically.
I mean, it does happen, like, in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Like, you know, like, you beat the champion in the G1, then you get a title shot. That does happen. But that's the G1, okay? Like, a match on Raw. Like, the problem is they just do this way too much. So that by the time you get to the actual match, it doesn't feel special anymore. So many matches, I think, like, you want... It's also indicative of, like, how weak the overall divisions are. And the lack of, I think, framework they had to establish, like, who a number one contender might be.
This women's division between the two brands, this should not be a weak division. It should not.
Yeah, no. But you know, they also like to feature their biggest talent in non-title matches, and this is what you get.
So she says that she handed the title to Asuka, and Asuka yells that she did not need Becky. And when you gave me that title, you were supposed to go home to have your baby, but you don't act like a mother. You act like a baby. And Becky stormed off like a baby.
I mean, Asuka's lines were pretty ridiculous, but I thought her delivery was so entertaining. And I thought Becky was very good here as well.
I thought they had like a fun interaction here, and Becky just storming off at the end of it. Veer Mahan versus Hartford's own Frank Loman.
That's a great name for
Frank Loman, low man on the totem pole. Was interviewed by Byron Saxton. He asks him, "Do you have any concerns?" He says, "Yes, I do. I don't want to be carted out of here, but I have a wife and three." I have three little triplets at home, which would technically be 9 babies that he has at home.
Did he say three little triplets?
He says, I have three little triplets.
Wow.
That's a lot of babies to take care of. You're out here wrestling.
Dude, this is not the pathway. Trust me.
This is his big chance.
Well, he got killed. He landed a boot and then was hit with a Thez press, side slam, avalanche, million dollar arm, and cervical clutch. The crowd was chanting something here. They were not chanting Loman, and he was submitted in a minute 23.
Might have been something Hartford specific.
Yeah, I couldn't make it out what was being chanted, but they were keeping themselves entertained.
Yeah, yeah. Laying the groundwork for Mahan. I'm always entertained by these promos.
Kevin Patrick interviewed Cody Rhodes. He says the chapter with Seth Rollins is closed. It's not. And that Theory is brimming with potential, but potential is like gold. You need to dig to find it. And he's going to win the United States title. He's not. Theory versus Cody Rhodes at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. At the beginning of the match, Theory was doing the Stardust mannerisms to get under his skin and then catches Cody with an elbow to the eye. And Cody was selling for some time. Theory pulls his leg out on the edge of the apron and then clears the announcer's desk. But then Cody is the one to try and get him onto the desk. Theory escapes getting into the ring. That was our setup for the commercial. Cody hit a moonsault off the top, nearly took his head off, and got a two count. And then a disaster kick, Cody cutter, crowd is picking up. So what do? Seth runs in and attacks him for the DQ at 13 minutes and 8 seconds. Pulled right out from underneath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the heat.
Oh, the heat.
So much heat.
Oh, I was so mad. I was like, oh, I'm going to watch next week to see what happens to this guy.
Here's my money, yeah.
And then Rollins just beat the hell out of him. He hit a curb stomp on the desk, and this was so violent that Corey Graves says, I have defended Seth in the past, but this was too far. He crossed the line, and everyone knows the unspoken rule about curb stomping a man's head on the desk. You just don't do that kind of thing.
Or anything on the desk, for that matter.
Yeah.
You know, it hurts that much more. Yeah, hey, really good match, I thought, between the two up until this point. You know, Cody's in-ring style, I think, continues to be really fresh in the context of, you know, like, we've seen so much of this roster already, it feels like, and Cody coming out here, like, his selling is really solid, and everything he does, I think, is really solid. So I enjoyed the match for the time that we had.
Sasha Banks and Naomi took on Nikki A.S.H. and Doudrop. So here was your question, Wave. Like, where's this going to go? Well, they're going to get a non-title match week one. You just form a team, and you get tons of opportunities. So Naomi's arm is taped up from the attack by Shayna Baszler on Friday, and Doudrop hits a seated splash, but then Naomi with the step-up enziguri and drives her into the buckle. Sasha is in, and she is caught going for a high cross with Doudrop catching her. Then Nikki comes in, snaps Banks' neck, and then goes for the swinging neckbreaker, but before, poses to the crowd, and this does not make Doudrop happy. And this allows Banks to escape, tags Naomi, and they hit their finisher, the rolling codebreaker, to pin Nikki in 424, and Doudrop is pissed, telling Nikki to get your head in the game and start taking this seriously.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I don't know if this is, like, already leading to a breakup or if this is supposed to be the start.
No one gets along in this company. Sasha Banks and Naomi are like the unicorn of a tag team that they actually like each other. It's very rare in this company that two partners get together and you're not just wondering, why are they doing this? They don't like each other. Could Doudrop not do better than Nikki A.S.H.? She doesn't want to team with her. She's like the weak link. We're right back to where we started.
I mean, Nikki did want, like, agreed to you know, take things seriously last week, so.
But she didn't here.
She didn't. So I guess that's the story. So this is probably just the start of the team and how Doudrop is going to have to continue to train Nikki to take things more seriously. Maybe eventually shedding that superhero gimmick and then maybe being some real contenders. I certainly hope so because, I mean, the division, of course, sorely needs more tag teams and I'm looking for more story and build for both Nikki and Doudrop. So you start off challenging the champions. I mean, that's how every great story begins, right?
Only one place to go from there. So A.S.H. drop 0-1 after 1 week.
A.S.H. drop. Wow.
Then Moose took on Ciampa with The Miz appointed as the referee, which he explained. Theory got Vince McMahon to appoint him as the referee so that we would have someone call it down the middle tonight. So we got one of my favorites, Way, where we got the heel referee that counts slow for the babyface and counts fast for the heel. So Miz is stopping Ali from attacking Ciampa in the corner, goes for a jackknife cover, and Miz is doing the slow count. Ciampa hits him with a knee strike and then a big lariat on the floor. And then I don't know what this said, but Ciampa goes to sit on the announcer's desk and do his, like, you know, the tough Timmy pat on the back spot. Yeah. And not only is there no acknowledgement of this, but as he does it, they go to the picture-in-picture replay, and no one reacts to this thing. That it just felt like he was trying to shoehorn into this match.
It's his wink to the audience that that carried over from NXT, but, like, Vince probably has no idea what the hell that is.
What's he doing? Did he hurt his back? What's wrong? Does he have, like, a scratch or something? Did he get a bug? What's on his back? Be careful. We're gonna cut down his last name too. He's just gonna be Pa. So, used a bulldog choke. Ali comes back. It was like this match, like, if you watch it on mute, it's fine, but this crowd was so out of it. Like, they were not into this until Ali finally got in some offense towards the end. But then he hits this big springboard tornado DDT, and Miz is so slow to count. Ciampa kicks out. Ali complains, and he is hit with an inverted DDT by turning his back on Ciampa. And there's the fast count at 5:36.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's to me, it's like another sports entertainment trope. You just have a referee who, you know, does your fast counts and slow counts and whatever. It's just another page out of their playbook. And I think, for me, the bigger story is it gave us an indication, or me an indication at least, of how they view Tommaso Ciampa. We were wondering, oh, okay, is he building up his own feud against Ali? I think this told you that he really is just an accessory to this Miz versus Ali feud, and that, if anything, he's probably just kind of like almost like a hired hand by the Miz. And in this match, I thought it made him look really weak to be taking some of these pinfalls lasting, what, like 5 seconds, you know, 7 seconds, and needing the Miz to fast count to help him win. So that all that said, like, it doesn't matter to them. You know, the focus here is the Miz versus Ali. It's just that, you know, as a Tommaso Ciampa fan, I'm a bit more kind of invested in seeing his growth. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm that confident about much beyond all this.
I'm not confident in Ciampa or Ali in these positions. I just see both kind of just whittling away in this role, that it's like there's no meat to this. It just feels like this is something that it's not going anywhere. So I'm not really invested in it.
Is this ultimately going to help Ali? Jury's still out.
Yeah. That might be the idea, but that's not been the result to me several weeks in. And then we had the Lacey Evans. Was this verbatim the same segment from Friday?
This seemed to me like almost like a condensed version
of all,
like,
of them?
Several. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe so. It might have been a brand new promo for all I know. But, like, the story is essentially, like, I think everything that she's been saying condensed into this one segment.
Yeah, it was kind of like an overview of all of them. And what was kind of odd was that they go to the announcers after, and Corey Graves has to react to this, and he's just saying that her story might be sensational, but it's all true. And it was like he said it kind of like half joking, like he and it was just like an odd reaction to, like, what's a pretty heavy story. And yeah, I don't know where this is necessarily going, but that's where we're at now with the character, where the stories are done, and now it's time for her to be on screen.
I'm so incredibly confused about what they're trying to do with such incredibly serious stories that are coming out of this person's mouth. You know, in any other context, I mean, you would think that this person would be a babyface, but, like, there are two instances now of weird presentation following these heartfelt promos that are leading me to at least consider the idea that they might be turning her heel intentionally, which is insane to me.
Like the way I took this line, it's like I feel like it was a much like the Samantha Irvin introduction of Lacey on SmackDown. Like, it was like this verbiage that was there for a reason. And Graves, like, it was just an odd reaction to say it might sound sensational, like almost making, like, this is such delicate material that you can't be playing around with. You know what I mean? Like, it's really going to offend a lot of people that I really hope that they're not going about this to try and make this into some sort of, you know, taking some, like, real life trauma and minimizing it to, like, as some kind of heel tactic, or the announcers downplaying it. I don't know. It's just, it's in an odd place given both of these reactions the way they've come out of them.
It is incredibly, like, yeah, completely odd. I have no idea how I'm supposed to feel about this. And the fact that they aired it on Raw, I guess she's not supposed to be either Raw or SmackDown, but these promos have only been airing on SmackDown, have they not? Right? So this is the first time we're seeing this on Raw.
So well, maybe it's just a case of, you know, wanting to, you know, I don't know. Like, maybe it's just a sign of, I don't know what you read from that.
It is one of the strangest things that I've seen, at least the last few weeks. I mean, the first couple weeks, I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, she's going to tell her real life story. She's going to be a new baby face. But then it kept going on and going on and going on. And looking at some of the online reaction, they've turned the audience on her more than have been with her. Not because of her story, of course, but because of how hard they've been driving it. You know, how
I'll just say it, that it's, if they are going in this direction where they are trying to make it seem like she is complaining about all of this, even though it's true, I just think that's such a horrible way to present this. And that's kind of the sense I get by it being labeled sensational at the end, but it's all true. Like, that's the conclusion you almost come to. It's that, like, she's being overly dramatic about her upbringing. Like, that's the takeaway you get from this.
So what end goal would you say that for? Like, what do they want the viewer to think?
Like, if the idea is that you are supposed to be having sympathy for this person and she wants you to feel sympathy for her, like, is that not what the line was coming out of the promo on Friday? Like, she expects you. What was the line that Samantha Irvin?
It was like, Lacey has requested that you show your appreciation and give her applause, like something to that extent. Very odd. I thought they were airing it this week as a way to fix what might have been like an error of speech on Friday, but instead I just felt even more confused after this one.
Yeah, I guess we will see. I mean, the proof will be in how this is presented. Maybe we're off, but it's like both back-to-back on Friday and Monday, I think it definitely gives you pause of like what they are looking to achieve with this direction. Lashley does a promo and says that Omos only won at Backlash because of MVP, so he makes the challenge for a rematch with Omos inside of a steel cage, and Lashley says, we're taking this to the only place possible, and that is the home of Nate Milton in Norfolk, Virginia.
Ooh, wow. Just, yeah, in Brother Nate's backyard.
That's it.
I mean, I think Chris Omele really would have loved to have been there, or would love to be there, you know, to see Omos, his favorite wrestler in the world, get this opportunity, a cage match. Yeah. Hey, I was a fan of the match on Sunday. I think they will do a good job in this cage.
Maybe they'll do... I feel like we're going to get something where like almost like breaks through the cage, or we're going to do something like that where the cage can't contain them.
Maybe. Yeah.
R-Truth is with Dana Brooke and Tamina. Both want divorces, but they have convinced Reggie and Tozawa that they're going on a double date so that they'll show up as a ruse so that they can serve them with divorce papers. So they walk up with flowers. Tozawa runs away so he can't be served, and Truth chases after him. And Tamina leaves with Dana while Reggie is pleading for Dana not to divorce him after their 3-week marriage.
I heard the chuckle. Does that mean you approve?
Of what?
This segment.
Oh, I don't know. I found it amusing that Tozawa ran away rather than being served.
That's how you avoid the divorce. Yeah, you don't get the papers. I mean, that's the story right now. So Tamina tells Truth to chase after him so that he can make the divorce official. And I guess that's next week's vignettes, you know? Truth is going to chase down Tozawa to give him divorce papers.
It's kind of like the exact same psychology of having the 24/7 title, is that you're constantly looking over your shoulder and they're trying to find you to serve you the papers instead of pin you.
Totally, yeah. They could do this for, like, you know, the next set of releases. Just be like, hey, if I don't
answer they've
the phone
been doing
call,
this for 3 years. They could be doing this for multiple years.
Oh, if I don't answer the phone, like JTG, if I don't answer the phone call, they can't release me. So here's a wrestler.
I wasn't
to chase
served.
These
I'm still under contract to this as an independent contractor. And then the main event, Becky Lynch is on commentary. It's Bianca Belair against Asuka in a non-title match to set up a title match if Asuka beats her in the non-title match. They mentioned that Belair...
5 minutes left before the show ends.
Dude, 10:55, this match starts. I was getting flashbacks to Nitro. So Asuka hits a sliding knee and Belair lifts her up. Asuka counters into an armbar and then to a triangle and gets slammed. As Jimmy Smith notes, she rampaged her way out. And then as Belair goes for a handspring, Becky pops up from the desk and grabs her, leading to the disqualification in 3 minutes and 2 seconds as Belair gets thrown into the steps. And then she attacks Asuka as well to complete our 3DQ evening.
That's too many, okay? One, I will allow them, but three on a show that had how many matches are we talking about? Six matches on the show? Five matches on the show?
No. We had nine matches, Wade.
No, are you seriously?
Yeah.
What were the nine? Okay, no, you don't have to enter them, but fine. Three out of, a third DQs out of, nine matches, that to me is still not a great result. I think it was overall a standard Raw. You had a very good opening match between RK-Bro and the Street Profits. Alexa Bliss coming back and some bits of good wrestling in Cody versus Theory. But man, all the constant DQs just kind of leave a bit of a bad taste in your mouth, if you're investing all that time. So what did you think, John?
I thought it was a pretty lackluster show overall. I wasn't as into the Cody Theory match as you were. I thought the best match on the show was the RK-Bro match with the Street Profits. I like the idea of starting off the show with a wrestling match instead of our long drawn out segment. I like the fact that they just got to a pretty hot match right out of the gate. Judgment Day, it's I'm still not really all bought into this, but I do like the addition of Rhea Ripley, and it's a group that's still trying to find its footing. So I think you give some leniency there, and the rest of the directions on the show. I can't say there's all that. There's all that to really just sink your teeth into regarding a lot of the programs. It's almost as though we have a bunch of the programs that are just TV only. And then we have our paper, last night, looking at tonight, nine matches. We had three people in matches that were on the pay-per-view last night. It's just such a big kind of difference between the two.
Well, I mean, the pay-per-views is where you go to see the stars, and TV is where you go to give people experience, or to build those stars, right?
Well, Backlash was also one where they did hold quite a lot of people off. It's not like you had an Owens or a Becky Lynch or, there were quite a lot of people that were not part of the show either. But it's just, you watch all of those programs and then the follow-up, it's there's your own set of different ones going on your television as well, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I'm just looking at the 3 hours and what are you really invested in feud-wise. I would say there's probably... I would say the Cody stuff is still the main interest point for Raw, but at the same time, it's also looking at once you get through this Seth Rollins feud of where you're going there, because I think he is still kind of your glue on this show in many ways as the main character.
Yeah, you also have Alexa Bliss returning, so she'll be paired up maybe with Bianca, soon enough. But she also seems to be a babyface right now, so maybe not. Who are the heels that they have?
Available. Well, wait, give her time, and then she'll have a reason to hate the fans, and then she'll tell them,
right.
Okay. All of you sheep.
Becky versus Asuka is a match that they seem to be building up to, probably for the pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's a good direction, and maybe even a three-way program, if you're going to involve... did you say Belair and Asuka, or Belair and Becky?
I said Becky and Asuka.
Oh, Becky and Asuka, yeah. So I guess you could insert Belair in some form or fashion there, or you could do Belair with... Rhea Ripley. There's some interesting directions on the women's side.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Tonight's feedback, we've got one here from Kate from Montreal on the forum, and she writes, if WWE can't figure out a way to properly finish matches between big stars, then they shouldn't be booking those matches. Knowing that both Cody and Theory and Bianca Asuka were headed to DQville made the matches weaker, and for the latter, it felt like the audience was tuned out as well. On an unrelated note, Nick Gage posted a heartfelt video about addiction and depression for Mental Health Awareness Month, talking about the importance of getting help and doing his part to end the stigma around those issues. Was really good to see.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Kate. Kate had some really interesting things to say about the Lacey Evans segment on Friday, and we've uploaded that clip for you guys to see. Even if you're not a Post Wrestling Cafe patron, it's on the YouTube right now. So go and check that out. I mean, the gist of her argument was that she felt, you know, it was really glaring in the WWE's presentation of this story dealing with mental health and not at least promoting source where people can find that help if they're looking. So I thought it was really interesting what she had to say. She was very passionate about it, and I encourage you guys to go check that out, as well as seeking out appropriate resources. If these are stories that resonate to you, because I'm so confused about what they're doing with this Lacey Evans story that I certainly don't think that you would. Yeah, even if you relate to it, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, the stuff that they talk about, John, is like directly.
You're talking about like suicide and addiction, which to me, it's inside of a company that has not earned that that sort of trust with its audience to go in a direction like that, and for fans to not kind of have their backup, because I will guarantee you a high percentage of their audience have dealt with it either directly or indirectly in their lives. These are very sensitive topics, and maybe ones that, you know, you shouldn't be going towards in a wrestling setting.
And the fact that we're even entertaining the idea that they might be somehow using this as fuel to turn her heel, whether or not they're intentionally doing it, the fact that it's even under consideration and that we're even the fact that we're doing anything but cheering for this person for talking about stuff like this is crazy to me, is unfathomable to me, and to me shows, I think, a real fumbling of the presentation of what we are seeing. So I still don't know what it is, and, you know, maybe we'll get a bit more clarity on Friday. There's one super chat for us to get to here, and this comes to us from David Rodriguez, who says, forget the Dr. Benedict flick, let's talk about Avatar 2. Are you an Avatar fan, John?
I never saw Avatar.
I saw it, didn't like it. So that's my talk. Hope you enjoyed it. I did see the trailer, did nothing for me. I'm really not at all excited for it. It's just not my thing, but it is for many people. It's probably going to be one of the most successful movies of all time. So, yeah.
Was it a successful Miami Grand Prix?
Did you watch it?
I watched most of it today. Yeah.
I think the consensus is that, I mean, for the most part, it was a bit of a boring race with a really exciting start and then maybe an exciting 5 to 10 minute close.
You take out those two passes by Max Verstappen in like the first couple of laps, the rest of it, I mean, it was like he starts in the third position and then he overtakes Sainz and then he overtakes Leclerc and gets those are the only exciting parts of this race. But would you ever want to go? This is one sport that I would say seems infinitely more interesting to watch on television than go in person.
I had that thought myself watching it, and the at-home experience is so great because the technology that they use to cover the sport is so good.
It's amazing. Like, the in-car perspective, the commentary is pretty on point.
The and different just the chart, you know, like knowing who what tires each person is on, how many spots they've moved up, you know, how long the pit stops are. Like, this is all information that I think is crucial to your enjoyment of this thing. But, of course, the atmosphere of being there is probably, you know, tough to replicate. Right.
Yeah, but I think that they're also, and I mean, I'm totally speaking about this as someone that's just, you know, following this at a very small level, but it just, like, you can go to any, like, a basketball game, to a football game, it's like, you're going to be able to follow what is happening. I can't imagine going to one of these and being on top and engaged without having my phone with me to be following, like, where each one is. I'm only going to get a certain view of the track, and to me, it seems like the hardest one to go for, the like, other than just being there and the spectacle of being with other race fans. I just think you're losing a lot without the benefit of television.
I mean, I've never been. I would hope that they have screens or, like, you know, at least like a stats board of, like, you know, who the leaders are at somewhere. But I think it's, again, it's probably more the atmosphere. As far as
like 82,000 people, so it's wow. I mean, enough people. I mean, that was the attendance figure I read. So, I mean, this was a monumental success for F1 over the weekend.
And I think all eyes are going to be on Vegas for next year, which, you know, might be like another Monaco for them in terms of, like, grandeur and what it means, especially for the U.S. market. So,
yeah, I got to say, I really enjoyed the early Sunday races a lot more. For my schedule, that's, like, so much easier because the middle of the day on a Sunday, it's just never going to happen.
Ratings will be really interesting.
Oh, I'm so excited. It's going to be the lead story on our news tomorrow. Yeah, 100%.
But, yeah, like F1 is especially curious because, like, the races start at all, like, times all over the place. And so
this is going to be through the roof, I imagine.
But I think it's a sport that's really unique because I think they condition their audience to, you know, find out for themselves and to seek and to potentially wake up at all different sorts of hours just to kind of catch these things live if you want to. So it's interesting.
Yeah, so we got Monaco at the end of the month. That's the next one, I believe.
Is that the next one? Is there no other race?
Oh, let me double check. I think so. No, Spain. Spain is the week Spain. Prior. Yes. Right. So okay. Got Spain and then Monaco and then Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. And then they come to Canada way.
Yeah, the Gilles Villeneuve circuit. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll see if Mercedes can you know, fix their shit.
Can they fix their shit? That'll be the question that looms over Spain. All right, that's going to wrap up the show, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and listening to all of our thoughts on the world at large. We are back on Tuesday, live 1 p.m. Eastern time here on the channel for the Post Daily News Show. You can always support Post Wrestling at postwrestlingcafe.com. A minimum of 2 bonus shows per week. You can't get enough, and we provide all of that and then some. And if you're a cafe subscriber, you can download the review of Doctor Strange 2 immediately once you're done listening to this with the thoughts of W.H. Park, John Cena, and Wei Ting going through the multiverse of madness. Was this a long movie? How long was this one?
About 2 hours, like 5 minutes, like really exactly 2 hours.
Okay, that's doable? The sweet spot of a movie. It's like, I didn't want to hear like Doctor Strange getting ambitious and like we feel the need to go 245 or something. Like that franchise has not earned that right, has it?
You have to listen to find out.
My thoughts. Not giving away anything. That is it for us. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll speak with you on Tuesday.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.